is Speak to Heal episode number 3, Loving Yourself Through Food with Birdie McNeil. Well, thank you everyone for tuning into our show today. Wow, I can't believe that November is already here. How crazy is this? Where has the year gone? But you know, fall has always been my favorite time of the year, as I love the changing of the leaves and just sitting outside and sipping apple cider and eating pumpkin pies, of course. Here in Los Angeles, we don't have too much of a fall, but I love traveling and visiting Washington State and Oregon. I used to live there, and just seeing all the beautiful trees that they have there was really a nice surprise for me, as I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina, and we have not too many different seasons. So I want to know what it is about fall that you love the most. Write to me at info@thenikkidebose.com and let me know, and I'll put some of them up on my blog at thenikkidebose.com. Also, I wanted to let you know that the National Eating Disorders Association recently published a blog about my upcoming book, Washed Away, and I'm very excited about that. You can visit their website at nationaleatingdisorders.org and click on Talk About It, then go to Need a Blog to check it out. My memoir will be released next year, and it covers my entire life, basically, and all of the challenges that I had to overcome. There's also a lot of stories about the modeling industry, and much of it is pretty dark because, well, I felt like it was important to accurately portray the business instead of glorifying it. Speaking of overcoming challenges, I am excited to introduce today's guest. She's someone who has really touched my heart and has had to overcome a lot in her life. I met her at this year's NIDA conference in San Diego, and we got to talking about mental health. I think you'll be as inspired by her as I was. Her name is Birdie McNeil. She has a very interesting name. I love her name. And she is a chef, a yogi, and a health coach. After her battle with anorexia nervosa, she was able to rekindle a healthy and fulfilling way of eating. She now cooks for self-care, artistic expression, and as an act of love. In her healthy coaching, she helps people develop a healthy and empowered relationship with food by investigating why, not what, we eat. She believes that eating well is not about balancing discipline and indulgence, but about listening to the mind, the body, and the spirit hunger for, and learning to nourish ourselves lovingly. So thank you so much, Birdie, for coming onto the show.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be on the show.
Now, why don't you just tell us a little bit more about who you are and your journey to this point, your journey of healing?
Yeah, so I still think of myself, you know, I think in most respects, most people would consider me recovered, but I still feel like I'm on a path, and that it's a very, you know, maybe not a lifelong path, but a long-term path. I am now working as a chef, more as a baker, and also as a health coach. As you mentioned, I love yoga. I'm a yoga instructor. And all of that is pretty new for me. When shortly after I started my recovery, you know, I feel like a lot of people do this to varying degrees. But for me, I pretty much wiped the slate clean with my life when I started my recovery. I actually, sort of before this whole lifestyle I'm leading now, I was previously a math professor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I left that career to pursue these things now. So yeah, it was a, you know, I think I'm still figuring how things fit in the picture. But in the beginning, I thought my problem was with food. Maybe with food and exercise, maybe food, exercise, and my body. You know, it was this very local, very small, I mean, not that it wasn't a severe, but it was a very small issue that I saw. And as I get further and further along, I'm realizing that it's not just about food. It's not just about body. It's really everything. I'm finding that my tendency towards deprivation, self-deprivation, is really everywhere, that there are a lot of aspects of my self-care that were lacking. Mm. So, you know, certainly I hit the heart of the issue first and focused on developing a healthy eating pattern, healthy eating attitudes. But since then, I've just been seeing that eating disorder pop up in all of these strange locations that I thought had nothing to do with food at all. So yeah, it's amazing that even when you've made immense strides, there's can still be a lot of work to do.
And how do you see your eating disorder pop up in different areas of your life?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it has to do with perfectionism for me. I find myself in lots of areas of life sort of saying to myself, well, that's fine for them, but I need to do better. Mm. Or, you know, or I need to do more with less, right? That's sort of the whole script of anorexia. I need to do more with less. And, you know, I see it come up in my job. I see it come up in my relationships with others. You know, I see it come up in my finances a lot. I have a very restrictive mindset in terms of my finances, I'm realizing.
Because it's that whole numbers game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So there are certain, like, little catchphrases, right, that, you know, like I said, like, it's okay for them, but it's not okay for me.
Right.
That I'll hear go on in my mental script, and I'll think, oh, wait, that's not what I think. That's my eating disorder popping up again. And trying to respond to that compassionately is really sort of the work I'm doing now.
So how did it begin for you in your life? When did you start noticing that you had issues growing up?
Yeah, so for me, it started very, very early. I actually, in my recovery at some point, I think it was spurred by one of the chapters from Life Without Ed that I was reading. I ended up looking through a bunch of childhood photos, and it's really amazing. I can almost draw a line in history when I feel like my eating disorder started. It was probably around first grade for me. And before then, I look at pictures and I think, oh, that looks like a picture of a happy child. And after that, I look at pictures and I think, oh, what a terrible picture. So I can almost draw a line in the sand there. Now, for me, I think my eating disorder kind of stayed at a low level for very many years. I had a lot of disordered eating behaviors. I had some really unhealthy attitudes towards food in my body, but it didn't really become a full-blown sort of clinically diagnosable eating disorder until I was about maybe 24. So a little bit later in life.
And did you have any support around you growing up? Was that...
A little bit. So my older sister also struggles with eating disorders.
Oh, I see.
I think that my mother has this wonderfully healthy relationship with food. And I think from someone that doesn't have any real struggles with food, it's hard to see warning signs. Mm-hmm. So in my adolescence, nobody really thought that anything was wrong. But my older sister, who had struggled herself, she could tell that something was up. So at that point, I remember she had basically like a little bit of a confrontational discussion with me when I was about 11, maybe, and told me her story, which helped to some degree.
And how old was she?
She was, I think, 16 at the time.
So you guys were really young talking about this. And so how did that affect your relationship? Did it strengthen your relationship, or did it?
It definitely did.
Yeah.
Definitely did. My sister and I have done a lot of bonding over our eating disorder struggles in general, mm-hmm. Some for the better and some for the worse. At various points, like, there's nobody, I feel like, in the world who understands what it feels like the way my sister does. And at the same time, like, there have been periods of time where we really enabled each other with our problems. So that's been a little difficult. And of course, it's easy to trigger each other too.
That's what I was gonna say. I know that a lot of times when there are multiple siblings dealing with mental health issues or eating disorders especially, it's very easy to feel like we want to compete. There's the perfectionism aspect. So how are you guys able to finally recover? Did you have to eventually kind of, you know, get away from each other to do that? Or, you know, how were you able to do that?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. And I still get triggered a little bit around my sister. I think part of what makes it difficult is that she has a different mentality her approach to recovery. Her approach is very much to make sure that her behaviors are healthy. And I'm focused much more on making sure that I have sort of a ease of mind, you know, that I'm not feeling very anxious or stressed around food. And so it's difficult for some, you know, for example, around the holidays last year, I feel like at most households around the holidays, there's just tons and tons of sweets everywhere. And at some point she decided that what she needed to do for herself was to just leave and go to her bedroom, or, you know, the bedroom that she was staying in at the time. We don't have our childhood home or anything. Yeah, but she had to leave the whole family, you know, the whole social gathering to just get away from that food. Which, you know, is difficult for me because it affirms that it's a threat, and it's also, it just sort of makes my heart ache a little bit, you know, that she's struggling so much that she can't participate. But, you know, I think that the way that at least I make it work is to just try to, you know, she's doing her, I'm doing me, and just viewing her as sort of an outside person, trying to be objective. You know, her actions don't affect me personally. Her opinions and views aren't something that I need to own myself. So trying to adopt that mentality is definitely what's been working.
And when you started recovery, you started at 24, you said. Mm-hmm. So what steps did you take to start getting into recovery?
Yeah. So I was really in the dark. It was hard. I knew I had a problem, but I didn't know what resources were out there.
Yeah.
I also, when I started my recovery, I had a lot of sort of those common misconceptions about eating disorders. And I had a lot of shame around my eating disorder. I didn't want to tell anybody that I was recovering from this issue because I thought, well, if I tell them I have an eating disorder, they're going to think that I'm really superficial. They're going to think I'm an airhead. They're going to think that all I need to do is just eat. What's your problem? Just eat. So I was really reluctant to seek help. I did end up seeking out a lot of resources. I started listening to the Recovery Warriors podcast, which was...
Yes. Fantastic. They're awesome. Yes, I know them very well. I write for Recovery Warriors. They're amazing, yeah. By the way.
Yeah, they are. You know, I started reading some books. You know, I read Life Without Ed.
Awesome. Jenny Schaefer.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And Janine Roth's books. You know, they're sort of, those books, I feel like they're sort of targeted at people with more binge eating disorder kind of spectrum. But they were so relevant to me. And so it took a while for me to find those resources. But once I did, I felt like a lot opened up for me. And I really started seeing my recovery as being less of a white knuckle, I'm going to eat like all of the normal people do, path, and more of a journey of self-reflection, introspection, and inquiry.
So it's more of an intuitive kind of, you know, recovery is not a straight line like we always hear people say. Oh. So you just kind of found it on your own way, your own journey.
And I think, you know, like all things, I had expectations for myself that were much too high in the beginning. I really thought that I could just, okay, I'm going to give up my eating disorder behaviors, and I'm going to eat normally. I'm going to eat like a normal person, day one. And, you know, of course, it's not that easy. And I was really in crisis for a long time because I didn't understand why I couldn't do this. I didn't understand. It felt to me like I just didn't have the normal body signals that other people do.
Right.
And it took me a long time to realize that I didn't have the normal body signals that other people do because my body was in such terrible shape at the time. But once I started to get healthier and really did pay attention to learning myself and learning to tune in to what my body needed, mm-hmm. it actually became doable.
Right, yeah. And that's one of the things that I struggled with too for a long time is realizing that I can't do this on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, because I went through the 12-step program in combination with therapy, and that's one of the things we had to realize that we need outside help.
Yeah.
You know, which was a big thing.
Absolutely.
And definitely learning to listen to your body's cues, because your body's so messed up in the beginning that it has no cues, so it takes a long time and a lot of patience.
Absolutely.
And so definitely as a health coach, how did you get started into, you know, taking that into teaching other people about their body's cues and to mm-hmm. listening to what their body, their mind, their soul is saying?
Yeah. Well, it was all really part of the same process. You know, I mentioned that in the beginning, I just felt like I didn't feel the way that other people felt. I didn't have those cues. I couldn't tell when I was hungry. I couldn't tell when I was full. And being the nerd I was, anyone that I was willing to admit that I was recovering from an eating disorder with, anyone who I was willing to talk to that about, I basically interviewed them about how they made those decisions, because I really wanted to understand. You know, so I would say, you know, how do you decide when it's time for you to eat? How do you decide when you're done? How do you decide what to eat? Like, what is going on with you that makes you feel all of these, or helps you make all of these decisions? How do you do this? And I did learn, you know, some things that were very helpful to me, but mostly I was just horrified, because almost everyone I talked to said that they were dissatisfied with how they made these decisions, that they thought that they were doing it wrong, you know, that they thought that they were eating too much or not eating enough or not eating as regularly as they should or eating too frequently, you know, or they felt like they were eating too much sugar, or, you know, they just weren't feeling like they were making these decisions from a healthy place.
I see.
And so that's when I realized, like, okay, I have a very severe eating disorder, but our nation has an eating disorder. It's really all over the place.
And in what way do you see that? What way do you think that our nation has disordered thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, certainly there's a lot of social pressure to be thin, and there's a lot of marketing. There's, you know, so much money in marketing foods, and it really creates a pull. And I think people get caught in that pull. So I think that, you know, a lot of people end up eating what companies are trying to sell them, and they're not feeding their bodies. Because, in fact,
they're not feeding their bodies intuitively because they're led by what the big companies are basically leading them to buy. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the social norming is so powerful. And you can read studies on this that are just amazing. Like, I read one study. It was about, they looked at women eating cookies. They took in a whole bunch of people that they told them that they were going to be taste testers for cookies, and they left them alone in the room, and they said, well, sample as many cookies as you need to give us like a quality rating on, you know, how good you think these cookies are. And they, you know, air quotes, accidentally left a sheet that had some kind of fictitious data for how many cookies previous participants in the study had eaten. And when that fictitious sheet said that other people had eaten a lot of cookies, that person would eat a lot of cookies. Mm-hmm. And when that sheet said that other people had eaten just a few cookies, that person would eat just a few cookies. So even when somebody wasn't in the presence of other humans that were eating, their concept of what was an appropriate amount was still dictated by what other people were doing. Yeah, so it's just amazing.
It's just like brainwashing, basically.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and we're not even aware of it most of the time.
No, we're not aware of it. And especially when you have genetic predispositions and, you know, the right environment present to create disordered behavior. And then on top of that, given as a society and these big companies that are pushing you and basically brainwashing you to eat in a certain way, I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster. And especially things like binge eating disorder, you know, it's no wonder that so many people struggle with binge eating disorder. So yeah. I definitely agree with you on that. So that's wonderful that you're able to help clients, you know, deal with something that affects so many Americans. You must see a lot of people in your practice struggle with binge eating disorder.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that binge eating disorder and really all eating disorders are vastly underdiagnosed. You know, and so that's something that I deal with in my coaching a lot. I have a lot of clients who clearly have disordered eating issues, maybe a diagnosable eating disorder, maybe not, but very few of them identify with that term. You know, very few of them would say that they have an eating disorder.
I see. And so what about exercise? Do you integrate exercise into your practice?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's one of these things that, I mean, it's all just about listening to your body, right? And so the same theories apply to food as apply to exercise. And definitely that's something that I address. But I find that most people have an easier time with exercise. I mean, I think that many people could get more exercise and that would be healthy for them. But it's not really something that is so closely married to our feelings of self-worth. You know, most people, you know, say they exercise a little bit, you know, too much or too less or whatever. If they have some kind of issue with exercise, most of them just sort of think, yeah, that's something that I could change. Not, oh, this is something that makes me an undisciplined human being, or, you know, that makes me unworthy of love.
Right.
Or a lot of those scripts that get tied with food.
Versus food, yeah. And so when you're dealing with maybe patients who have noticeably disordered eating behaviors, how do you approach the exercise?
One of the things that I do is I try to, you know, just like a food journal, try to get people to really feel what they're feeling like before and after exercise and notice patterns. You know, if you exercise 3 days in a row, how do you feel at the end of that? Or if you don't exercise for 2 weeks, how do you feel at the end of that? And trying to ask probing questions to get them to figure out what their good balance is, rather than scripting something for them.
Yeah, that's so it's more of an intuitive process also.
Right.
Well, awesome. So thank you, Birdie, for coming onto the show. And congratulations to you for just really kicking Edie in the face with what you're doing. Now, if there's one thing that you've learned along your journey, what would you pass on to others? What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not about food.
What is it about? What do you say?
Janine Roth has this like little snippet quote that she says in a lot of various places that the universe is represented on your plate. Like your thoughts and feelings, philosophies about the world, about your life are represented on your plate. And so, you know, if you are restricting your food, it's not just about what you're eating, it's about your philosophy that maybe you don't deserve, that you don't deserve a lot.
Right.
And where is that coming from, and where else is that, where else are you seeing that? Right? Or if you're binging, there's some part of you that feels like you're never satisfied. And where else does that show up in your life?
Right.
And, you know, we can force ourselves to eat in a somewhat healthy way. But if we don't address those big life issues, binging and restricting on all of the different things that we come into contact with, then we're always going to be walking that tightrope.
I totally agree with that. It's a much deeper issue. So why is it that we're not able to just eat intuitively and love ourselves, mind, body, spirit? I completely agree. I love that. Thank you so much, Birdie, for coming on to the show. And if anybody wants to find out more about you, where can they go?
So I'm on Facebook. That's a good way to reach me or contact website. I also have a website. It's Like a Bird. So LikeaBird. liveedit.aurora.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Birdie, and I'd love to have you on again in the future. I hope you have a wonderful day.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.